and non-binary artists in the Kingston community. Miss Emily will be hosting the night with feature performances from Clara Smallman, Julia Finnegan, Kyra Daniel, and Savannah Shea. Stay for the fireside chat exploring songwriting, creativity, and the challenges of navigating the music industry as underrepresented voices, as well as a showcase of women-led businesses in the Kingston community. It's sure to be the event of the season. Doors are at 7 p.m., and tickets can be found at ticketscene.ca.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Viewpoints. On today's show, the province of Nova Scotia invests over $1 million in a Cape Breton biotech plant.
So in effect, this replaces an oil refinery.
Nova Scotia, that's where the Cat's Lobster Shack snatched the title of Best Lobster Roll for the third time.
It's a fresh batch of judges every time, so it's pretty unique that one restaurant's won three times, honestly.
A new store sets up a shop in Winnipeg to help support war displaced Ukrainian artisans.
This shop is like a goal to help all vendors to make some extra money. So it's like important for us to do this.
The Cobourg Council rescinds its decision to declare December as Christian Heritage Month.
What that decision did was open the door for other religious proclamations and flag-raising requests.
In Ontario, the Aurora House organizes its charity walk to raise funds and to support local victims of human trafficking.
I think the youngest I've personally been called about was 12 years old, but average age really is 14 to 24.
The Camino Wellbeing and Mental Health connects with people who need to talk about their mental health issues. And you can have a howling good time and a three-course dinner with wolves at the Halliburton Forest and Wildlife Reserve. One guy even sets up to propose. Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Hello, thanks for being with us again this week. My name is Boris Chassaigne. I'll be with you for the next half hour and in good company with our national correspondents. Human trafficking and sexual exploitation is often thought as an urban problem, but it's not always the case. A local safe house and support system for victims in Wellington County is proof the issue also exists in smaller locations. Taking care of victims of sexual exploitation is part of the mission that Aurora House is taking on. It's also gearing up for its annual charity walk through the Coldest Night of the Year event. Held on February 2nd, the charity walk is the organization's main fundraising event, and it essentially relies on community support. Louisa Cross is the executive director and founder of Aurora House. She says the organization helped up to 75 victims in the region last year alone. Here's Riley Gillespie-Wilson in Ferguson, Ontario.
Aurora House is entirely run by donors and community contribution, with no government support right now. Their founder and executive director, Louisa Kraus, says while higher numbers can be observed in urban centers, human trafficking is very much an issue within Wellington County as well.
Obviously, the numbers are lower than Toronto, for example, but we do have and have had residents from Ferguson, Aurora. We have worked with many from this area. Last year when I got numbers, I believe the number was around 50 to 75 different people in this area that were victims.
Aurora House says they strive to allow victims of sex trafficking to rest, rebuild, and restart. Kraus explains human trafficking is something that affects a wide age range of individuals in the region.
I think the youngest I've personally been called about was 12 years old, but I heard of something recently in the neighboring area that was like a 7-year-old. But average age really is 14 to 24 for young women. We have had women as old as 50 in our care.
This year's Coldest Night of the Year event is focused on Stage 3 for women who are victims of sex trafficking, restarting. This means allowing them a smooth transition back into independence. The night is a big fundraising event for Aurora House, having raised $100,000 last year. Kraus says these types of events are crucial to Aurora House's operations.
without the money, we would not be able to actually have a Lore House. And we don't currently have any support from the government. So everything we get is from our supporters and donors and stuff like that. So that's the biggest way, is money and volunteering.
The walk strives to reach last year's mark of $100,000 and will take place on February 22nd in Elora. This is Riley Gillespie Wilson reporting for the Local Journalism Initiative.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
This time of year can be difficult for many people, and reaching out for help in the mental health crisis can, for many, be really challenging. So the Camino Wellbeing and Mental Health, a nonprofit organization based in Kitchener-Waterloo, offers an online presence, reaching out to those in need through their website. Tracy Elop, the CEO of Camino House, says there are many ways people struggle with mental health. Cora Kuhl in Kitchener-Waterloo met with her.
Depression and anxiety are really prevalent across the community. This time of year, we have people also who are really affected by a seasonal disorder, and I think that comes to light a lot in the cold weather and people not getting outside enough, maybe not enough exercise, but also just that feeling of hopelessness and despair that sometimes come with the winter time.
Elop says the community is still facing effects of the pandemic.
Canadians report having poor or fair mental health three times more often now than they did before the pandemic. So that would be sort of 26% in 2021 compared to 9% in 2019. So those are huge increases, and just kind of reaffirm the extent of the challenges.
The Center for Addiction and Mental Health says that the stigma around mental health prevents 40% of people with anxiety or depression from reaching out. Elop says she hopes Camino makes it easier to reach out.
I hate the idea that the stigma around mental health continues to exist. And, you know, if I would say one thing to anyone who's listening, there is absolutely no harm in reaching out. And organizations like Camino Wellbeing and Mental Health, I hope make it easier for people to reach out.
For individuals who are struggling with mental health and who may not be ready to reach out, Elop shares some suggestions.
If they're feeling anxious or depressed, friends are there for a reason. And so, you know, there's no harm in talking to a friend. I think people maybe underestimate the value of exercise, the value of getting enough sleep, the value of being outside on days that we could actually see the sun. So all of those things contribute. Eating well contributes to your overall mental health and well-being. But there are times when, people need a little bit more.
If cost is a factor, Elop says there are many programs out there to assist.
Almost 60% of young people who have signs of a mental illness are not getting help because of the cost. And the reality of it is that even if you don't have benefits through work, even if you don't have the financial means to pay, the support for you is still available through organizations like Camino.
Camino Wellbeing and Mental Health is a nonprofit organization that is there to help members of the community who are in need of support. In Kitchener, with the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Cora Kuhl.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
Next, from Ontario to Manitoba, to tell you about the Colo Shop. It's a cozy new gift shop in Winnipeg's East Kildonan area, a shop which was set up to create financial opportunities for Ukrainian artists and crafters. The idea began when an online group of war-displaced Ukrainians started selling their art and handmade products online. The Colo Shop owner, Seri Okrimenko, says his wife, Yulia, came to Canada with their son and started making handmade items and selling them at different markets. They later connected with other Ukrainians in the area who wanted to do the same. Ryan Funk in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
This is what happened with my wife. She came to here with me, without me, with my son, and at start, it was hard time, like need to find a job, need to find all process of documents, etc. flow. So she can make some handmade stuff and try to resell through the markets.
According to Winnipeg's 2021 census data, 90,380 city residents reported Ukrainian heritage. By February 2024, 2 years after the war began in Ukraine, nearly 29,000 Ukrainians had arrived at Manitoba's reception center at Winnipeg Airport, and more than 23,600 provincial health cards had been issued. Serhii and his wife, Julia, had once dreamed of opening a flower shop in Ukraine. When war erupted, Julia and their young son fled to Canada. Now reunited, Serhii says he sees Colo Shop as a fresh start for that dream and a way to give back. Julia now volunteers at the shop. She walks through the space, which is filled with embroidered shirts, handmade jewelry, traditional Ukrainian dolls, and home decor created by the shop's 15 vendors. Stopping by ornaments along a wall, she shares a story about one of the vendors.
This works from Marina Zadavich. She makes some ornaments and painted by herself. So she also came from Ukraine when Zeva started with her little son. And for her, like when she decided to come and sell their products, it was a big opportunity for her because we know she is with her son and she need to earn some money. Like it's at this shop, it's like a goal to help all vendors to make some extra money. So it's like important for us to do this.
Victoria Maslovska, another vendor, arrived in Canada with her two children. She says the opening of Colo Shop has been a game changer for her small business.
For me, this store is another amazing place where I can sell my beeswax skin creams and lip balms without needing to be there in person. It helps me reach more people, gives my products recognition, and really supports my small business.
Serhii says Winnipeg's Ukrainian community has been incredibly supportive and excited to visit the shop. He hopes that even those without Ukrainian heritage will stop by, connect with the vendors, and to learn more about them and Ukrainian culture. I'm Ryan Funk.
Hi, this is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You're tuned to Viewpoints.
The province of Nova Scotia has invested more than $1 million into agri-food innovation in Cape Breton. The investment was made to the Versurance Center, an independent clean technology development and deployment facility for their biomanufacturing fermentation plant in Edwardsville. Biomanufacturing is the process of using living systems, such as plant and animal cells, to produce commercial materials. The goal of the plant is to replace petrochemicals and the production of materials such as nylon, therapeutics, and dyes and more. More with Jacob Postlewaite and Glace Bay, Nova Scotia.
The province has made a $1 million investment into a biomanufacturing plant in Cape Breton that has the potential to replace an oil refinery. The investment was made to the Versurance Center, an independent clean technology development and deployment facility, for their biomanufacturing fermentation plant in Edwardsville. Biomanufacturing is the process of using living systems such as plant and animal cells to produce commercial materials. Material using biodegradable elements is created in a lab and then replicated or grown in the plant's fermentation tanks before it's shipped off to a client. Beth Mason is the executive chair of the Versurance Center and discuss some of the products the plant produces.
So it could be things like bioplastic molecules for making food films. It could be a functional health ingredient, such as a prebiotic. It could be a therapeutic for health of animals. It could be a green chemical, like a solvent or an adhesive or a dispersant, or it could be a dye.
Mason says everything in our lives is produced from petrochemical fossil fuels, and the plant will work to replace them.
If you took everything that's around us, it would disappear if petrochemicals disappeared. So nylons, we can do that by bacteria, making a bio-nylon. So of the goal is that as petrochemicals are displaced, we're going to replace them with bio-based production like this. So in effect, this replaces an oil refinery.
The plant will be able to grow materials from 10 to 10,000 liters in their fermentation tanks. The plant is still under construction and is expected to begin production in the spring. The investment by the province was announced at the plant by Glace Bay Dominion MLA John White, who says the investment is helping put Cape Breton first.
The investment will position Cape Breton and Nova Scotia for growth in Canadian biomanufacturing sector. It will enable new products and services that were previously not possible in this province.
The province has previously contributed $2.5 million towards the plant. The new investment will allow the Verschuren Center to increase their number of clients from 40 to 50 and create more opportunities for training and employment. The plant currently employs around a dozen people. White was joined by Verschuren Center CEO Dr. Baolin Chen, who echoed his sentiments and said the plant will help make Nova Scotia a national player.
So the support of our partners in the province on such a game-changing asset means we can help small and medium-sized enterprises from across the country achieve a path to the market, bring jobs and investment to Nova Scotia. And this plant allows companies to stay in Canada rather than leave for Europe and South America, where the only other similar scales exist.
The total cost of the facility is $13 million and is the largest of its kind in Canada. Verschuren Center currently works out of a lab at Cape Breton University using a single bioreactor. While the plant will vastly expand Verschuren Center's operation, Chen says it will also help address net zero goals. I'm Jacob Postlewaite.
You're tuned to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
So 2 weeks ago, we told you that the Cobourg Council is rethinking its position on issuing religious declarations. This after being asked to designate a day in March as Atheist Awareness Day. Well, Council has rethought its position, and Christian Heritage Month is no more as of January 31st. At its latest meeting, the Cobourg Council went back on its decision and voted to rescind the Christian Heritage Month declaration. Dan Jones reports.
Cobourg Council has rescinded a proclamation which declared December as Christian Heritage Month. The abrupt reversal comes after citizen Bob Ledrew in mid-January told a corporate finance and legislative standing committee meeting that he was denied a request from municipal staff to declare March 23rd as Atheism Awareness Day. Ledrew was back in front of council Wednesday night, saying the town is applying its religious declarations policy unfairly. He says his request was denied as the town's flag-raising and proclamation policy does not allow for declarations to be issued for religious organizations or events.
I think that that decision has the potential to have some negative impacts on the town. I wanted to highlight the fact that, in effect, what that decision did was open the door for other religious proclamations and flag-raising requests that are now going to feel that they have a right. If one has the right, then we all have the right.
Councillor Randy Barber, who initially voted in favor of the proclamation, focused on the heritage portion of the declaration, suggesting that Cobourg was founded on Christianity.
The town then saying that a Christian heritage awareness then would mean that what the base roots of Cobourg were at that particular time, and that's what it's celebrating.
Ledrew countered, saying that Northumberland County is becoming less religious. He said at a 2021 Statistics Canada Religious Diversity Report, suggesting that approximately 45% of the county's population has no religious affiliation, up from 25% 10 years ago. He also warned that if you allow one religious-based proclamation, then council should be declaring all religions.
I think that decision is incorrect in light of the fact that there was a Christian Heritage Month. I think you could further argue that there's no atheist church, there's no pope of atheism, there's no imam of atheism, and you could argue that atheism is the inverse of a religious organization, and that Atheism Awareness Day is the opposite of a religious event.
A motion put forward by Deputy Mayor Nicole Beattie and amended by Mayor Lucas Cleveland rescinded the five-year proclamation declaring December as Christian Heritage Month. As well, municipal staff suggested a policy change requiring citizens requesting a proclamation to do so 3 months in advance of their declaration to allow council and staff to adequately review whether that request meets established policy. Staff are expected to return to council at a later date with recommendations. I'm Dan Jones.
Candace Vetter in Embrim, Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints.
So tell us, are you hungry? You might be after our two next stories. It seems that simplicity and consistency are key to the success of Captain Cat's Lobster Shack. The eatery secured its third consecutive victory in the category of Best Lobster Roll. Captain Cat's Lobster Shack restaurant in Barrington Passage, Nova Scotia, near the self-proclaimed lobster capital of Canada, took home top honors last Sunday in the annual lobster roll-off as part of the Nova Scotia Lobster Crawl. Captain Cat's kitchen manager Wendell McKay explained that the secret to their success is letting the lobster shine. Pencils ready, all the ingredients and culinary secrets were revealed to Rick Conrad in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
We have a winner of number one is Captain's Cat's.
Keeping it simple paid off big for Captain Cat's Lobster Shack on Sunday as it grabbed the title of Best Lobster Roll on the South Shore. It's the third time the Barrington Passage restaurant has topped the competition in the annual Lobster Roll-Off as part of the Nova Scotia Lobster Crawl. They won the first roll-off in 2018. Wendell McKay is the kitchen manager at Captain Cat's. He says it's the same recipe every year.
Feels good to be back in the winner's seat for sure. We've won a few years in the past, but it's been a couple years since we've won. And we like to focus on the lobster and not adding too many bells and whistles. And sometimes the lobster gets left in the back of the palate that way. So we put fresh lobster meat, green onion, celery, mayo, and just a little bit of spinach between the bun and the lobster to kind of keep the moisture from penetrating the bread too much. We just use regular butter on the butter of the bun, no garlic or anything.
Victoria Hopkins made the winning lobster roll.
And I am the cold roll mama, and I'm the one that makes the cold roll with lots of love.
11 restaurants from around the South Shore competed in the blind tasting on Sunday afternoon. They ranged from the traditional, like Captain Cat's, to the elaborate. Some rolls featured Nova Scotia smoked salmon and pepperoni, or deep-fried lobster macaroni and cheese, in addition to lobster meat. Four travel writers from outside Nova Scotia served as judges. Stephanie Miller-Vincent is the coordinator of the South Shore Tourism Cooperative, which organizes the Lobster Crawl. She said they bring in a new group of judges every year, and none of them eats a lobster roll at any of the competing restaurants before the big day.
It's a fresh batch of judges every time, so it's pretty unique that one restaurant's won three times, honestly.
Second place went to the Quarterdeck Resort, which hosted the event this year, and Osprey's Nest Public House and Petite Revere finished in third. Lobster lovers can vote for their favorite lobster roll for the whole month of February. Details, including the 11 participating restaurants, are on the Nova Scotia Lobster Crawl website. I'm Rick Conrad.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. radio@frequencynews.ca.
And we close this edition of Viewpoints at the Halliburton Forest. That's where a wolf sanctuary partnered up with a local restaurant to offer a candlelight dinner with wolves. The Wolf Sanctuary dinner experience features a three-course meal, and the guests have the whole center to themselves to view the wolves playing, even eating their own dinner sometimes. They can also tour the museum undisturbed by crowds. The idea came out of an unusual request by a guy who wanted to propose. It's become so popular that the Dinner with Wolves program is now by far the center's biggest and best-selling attraction. More on this with Elizabeth Oakley.
It's an iconic sound, the sound of the wild, the sound of wolves. And at the Halliburton Forest and Wildlife Reserve's Wolf Sanctuary, you can now enjoy a catered three-course meal while taking in the sights and sounds of the five gray wolves who live there through the Dinner with Wolves experience. Marina Wigmore, the sanctuary's Wolf Center and Experience Manager, explains how an overseas inquiry about hosting a surprise wedding proposal there turned into the Dinner with Wolves program.
So at one point, I had gotten an email from a gentleman from the UK, was coming to visit some cousins in Canada with his girlfriend, and was wanting to propose. So he was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I think this would be a really cool place to do it. Please help. And I was like, sweet, I'm on it. At that point, I think just like a few months before that, I had had my own wedding. So I was fully on board. I was like, let's do this. Let's do this proposal for you. So we put together, you know, let's do an intimate dinner here. And we kind of did a surprise. There was like a public event beforehand. So I said, okay, like come for the public event. And then when everybody's leaving, say you just have to come inside to go use the bathroom or something like that. Just come back in for a few minutes and then say, oh, let's just peek at the wolves one more time. Let's go back up to the observation. And we had the whole dinner set up, fairy lights, the whole everything. And of course she said yes. And so then they had a lovely kind of candlelit dinner while the wolves were hanging outside the windows. And, you know, seeing how special that was for them, we were like, okay, this is a cool thing that other people would enjoy.
Catered by nearby Bosch Kung Smokehouse, the dinners have been wildly popular since they began just over a year ago. Marina says the allure of seeing wolves never gets old, and the mystery surrounding them is what attracts both visitors and diners alike.
Typically, the wolves are hanging out right outside the window. Sometimes they're eating too. Sometimes they're playing. Sometimes they're just napping. Sometimes they're a little less present, but it's such an intimate way to experience the wolves in the Wolf Center. They have the whole museum to themselves. It's completely private. You know, I've had people in tears at the end of it because it was just that special for them. They just connect to wolves in such a different way. And it's been really beautiful and a really well-loved program.
The dinners take place Monday to Friday at the center. In the winter, seatings are at 3 p.m. because of the limited daylight hours. Marina says the feedback has been positive given the uniqueness of the experience.
People are looking for transformative experiences. They want to be changed. And people do leave feeling like this was so cool. They want to send pictures to all their friends. They're telling everybody. And I've had a number of ones where it is like, hey, you know, my sister came and now I'm coming or whatever, things like that. And, you know, word of mouth has, in the history of Halliburton Forest, always been the best marketing.
Thanks to Elizabeth Oakley. And this is how we close our show this week, thanks to our many journalists, Rick Conrad, Dan Jones, Elizabeth Oakley, Ryan Gillespie-Wilson, Cora Kuhl, Ryan Funk, and Jacob Postlewaite. Thanks to our national editors, Victoria Fenner and Conrad Fox. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm Boris Chassaigne, your host and producer. Thanks for keeping us company this week, and until the next, ciao.
Welcome back to another episode of Plugged in My Ears. I'm joined by my lovely and beautiful co-hosts, Adam and Kyle. My name is Sam. So much has happened in the last week. Even yesterday, crazy day in sports with the Super Bowl. I'm not really sure where to begin. It's been a wild one. I think we should start with the Super Bowl, though. That's the most significant thing I can think of. Really unpleasant game to watch. Not very interesting. I know Adam's spoken about it a little bit online. Adam/AI on LinkedIn. He found some critical points, some critical infrastructure that helped the Philadelphia Eagles beat the Kansas City, not Chiefs, the losers. And I don't know, Adam, would you like to share perhaps all the marvelous things you foresaw about the Eagles' win over the Kansas City Chiefs?
Sam, I can definitely do that for you because I know it would make you so happy. So the Eagles won 40-22, but it was honestly more of a blowout than what it looked like because the Chiefs scored some garbage time touchdowns at the end of it that were just kind of to make it look like it was a little bit closer than it actually was. This was a garbage game. It was not exciting. It was not that fun to watch. As a Bills fan, it was enjoyable. I kind of got like a sense of, I was just like happy to see the Chiefs fall apart. I enjoyed seeing the Eagles go up as big as they did, but then after like 24 points, I was like, okay, this is just not that great of a game. Kind of disappointing. I always like when the Super Bowl is competitive. This year, it was just not. I was at this great party. They had chicken wings. It was pretty sick, and chili dogs. Got to thank Sam and Kyle for hosting me. It was a really enjoyable time. I don't know. My Super Bowl experience, I would say, because of the hostility of the fans in Philadelphia, I think that this is a C+ for me. I give the Super Bowl a C+. The game sucked. So the game gets an F. Wings and chili dogs bring it back up to maybe a B-. Mm-hmm. It was good.
Yeah.
And then the Philly fans bring it back down to a C+ because that's crazy. We're going to talk about that a little bit in a bit about how crazy these Philly fans are. But
yeah. Well, Kyle, what was your take on the game overall? The atmosphere, the vibe, what you saw on TV, what happened at the house?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like there was some weird stuff going on in the game. Maybe there's some larger things reflective of the, let's just say, turmoil in the States. But, there's just first president to ever attend the Super Bowl, Trump. He actually left halfway through because guess what? He was cheering for the Kansas City Chiefs. Sounds about right.
Was he actually cheering for the Chiefs?
No, I think he left before. Maybe he might have left because of the halftime show or either before, but he didn't stay for the whole game. But he was cheering for the Chiefs, yeah.
That was a wet blanket move.
I don't know. Weird all around. Trump got cheered. Taylor Swift got booed.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of the game.
Some weird stuff going on. I don't know how to feel about the game from that perspective. The halftime show was
miserable.
Okay, I guess.
Didn't think it was very interesting.
That being said, this is no diss on Kendrick. I think the halftime shows have kind of been lousy for the last while. Like, this is not a new thing. They've kind of just always, they've just kind of gradually declined. I was trying to say that I think they've switched to pop and, these kind of rap artists and stuff just to, try to draw in new audiences. When in reality, I was saying, I would infinitely rather have, Green Day or, like a band, like actually good artists, go and have, a good show at the halftime. I don't know.
What a game that would have been to have them play Freebird at the halftime show, Eagles won.
Any of those bands, I don't know. Just a different genre of music for me, but, I guess that's just my opinion on it.
Well, I think Kendrick's a great singer, but I agree. I just think the production of the halftime shows decreased a lot. I remember watching in 2011, 12, 13, 14, 15. It was a spectacle. I wouldn't really call that halftime show that much of a spectacle. Kendrick did a good job performing. Nothing to me sparkled. That's the way I'd put it.
I honestly think he did that on purpose. He was trying to send a message, which you know what? I as a Canadian, I kind of appreciate it. I guess he's sticking it to the man.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Yeah.
Drake's clearly going to respond pretty negatively. I think Kendrick might have sung a song that Drake was not too fond of.
Yeah.
A song in particular over which Drake is now suing Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, really? I mean, I don't know. I couldn't care less about any of that stuff. It's all whatever. Fluff.
What color was the Gatorade?
Yellow.
Yeah.
Yellow.
someone, there was, must have been insider stuff, because I remember, I don't honestly don't follow any of this stuff, but I do remember someone at our house last night saying that suddenly the odds for yellow just got way better like halfway through the game.
Really?
Yeah.
They must have seen something.
Someone saw something, right? Like, I don't know. It's always, yeah, there's always some weird stuff going on with that. But
huh.
It was not clear this year again.
Adam, did you place any bets on the Gatorade color?
Not on the Gatorade color, but I did have a nice parlay going. It just sadly wasn't the game for that parlay. Yeah.
What was the parlay?
Oh, it was a Saquon Barkley rushing touchdown.
So many people got burned on the Saquon.
Of all the points they scored, too, that and the fact that he didn't score a touchdown was ridiculous. So I needed that to happen. I also bet that there would be a successful two-point conversion at some point in the game, which was the case. The Chiefs actually converted two. And then I needed a scoreless quarter. So I needed one quarter for both teams not to score. Mm-hmm. Pretty self-explanatory.
That's pretty good. Part
and that didn't happen. Sadly, it was a fun one. I was kind of hoping. I mean, like, it's just not a conventional one. Like, I don't know, based off of yards or catches. It was more like, I don't know, more a fun one. But I do like putting one on the Super Bowl. Usually it's been the Gatorade color. That's what I've gone with the last few years. But I have not won in the last 2 years, so I decided to switch it up a little bit. But
fair enough. Well, let's address the elephant in the room. After Philadelphia won the game, there were videos circulated on Reddit of a truck getting taxed a little bit, we'll call it that. And the only thing that was coming out of this truck was towels meant for a hotel. So what do you guys think? Like, did the hotel survive the lack of linen?
I think they might have survived that. I think a bunch of random stuff was going on in Philadelphia, to be completely honest. I'm sure a bunch of stuff's missing and a bunch of stuff has probably been added to the streets, but I heard that some telephone poles got so kindly removed to just increase traffic flow, but, you know, the city structure in downtown has been altered slightly.
Yeah, I heard they were broken anyways, and that's why they allowed them to take them out, but yeah. I didn't even hear about this truck full of...
Yeah, so this is really funny. On like one of the busiest streets in Philadelphia, there's a truck that was supposed to deliver a bunch of towels to a Marriott that's in downtown Philadelphia, and people just stopped the truck, opened it up, and started like dumping all the towels out on the street, and people started stealing the towels and running around with them and throwing them up in the air. It was pretty funny, but hey, what can you say? Like, Philly's going to be Philly. And I think that was inevitable, regardless of the result of the game.
That was probably the safest parlay on that one, if Philly causing mayhem.
Yeah, honestly.
I don't know if the payout would be very high, because it was almost guaranteed, but
yeah, pretty safe.
Yeah, but on a more serious note, though, where does Kansas City go from here? Obviously, they've been a powerhouse for the last 5 years. And as Tom Brady said at a roast on Netflix, you know, that most of their history has been an unsuccessful one. Is this the beginning of the end of the Chiefs dynasty?
Man, that's a tough question, Sam. That is deep. I know a lot of people before the Super Bowl were comparing Patrick Mahomes to Tom Brady, saying if Mahomes won this one, then he was on track to be better than Tom Brady all time.
Really?
I was like, there's no way these people realize how good Tom Brady was. Like, I don't know if all the analysts have turned into like 8-year-old boys, but I was like, that is a crazy take. Tom Brady is still by far the GOAT, win or lose with Mahomes yesterday. But this loss really solidified it for me. Like, if I ever hear Patrick Mahomes in the same conversation, the GOAT conversation with Tom Brady again, I'll just show them the score of this game and how they played, because, I mean, even the stats, it looks good. It looks like Mahomes played well, but they put up 16 points in the fourth quarter when they were already down like 30.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a good game at all. This one definitely hurt Mahomes' legacy. Kelsey was a non-factor. I mean,
Kelsey wasn't very good in the other game, too, though.
He didn't really play great this season. A lot of people are expecting him to maybe retire, and I think that's a deciding factor at the end of this one. Andy Reid said he is coming back.
He is? Okay.
Yep, so the head coach... Or he should. At least he said, I believe it was before the Super Bowl, he said he was coming back no matter what. But he's getting up there in age. I mean, I guess you don't really have a limit on how old a coach can be. But, I mean, I don't know. I think that they've got to run it back, the same kind of stuff. I mean, they were a solid team. They went 15-2 with quotation marks beside that, because like they didn't actually go 15-2. They got bailed out by the refs so many times that they should have been like 8-9. But that's a different conversation. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really liked I liked what the Chiefs had going. Like, obviously not as a Bills fan, but as like a football fan, they had a good team. They didn't utilize their run game at all in this game. Kareem Hunt and Isaiah Pacheco got shut down so easily. I don't know if the Eagles were just super good or if the Chiefs were this bad, but I think there's not much the Chiefs can really change. I mean, they've already got loaded talent at wide receiver. They've got Mahomes at quarterback. They can strengthen the offensive line and defensive line as much as they want, but that's not going to be a game changer, especially with such a low draft pick and no cap space. So I don't really think the Chiefs can change much. I still think they'll be competitive next year, but I'm confident that next year is the year of the Buffalo Bills. I think that it's going to be their first Super Bowl ever. I'm saying it right now. Bills beat the Commanders in the Super Bowl. All right.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big take. Yeah. A big take.
We're going to come back to this one, and it's going to be the case. When you guys are gone and I'm running plugged in my ears by myself next year, I'll Zoom call in
exactly.
For the Bills Commanders, okay?
All right. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
But maybe we'll shift away and rotate to hockey. Big things coming up on the NHL scene, or I guess in the sense world hockey. The Four Nations Cups begin this week. Kyle, I know you follow this with great intent and very fervently as well, especially seeing as though there's a lot on the line for the Canadian national team. What's your take, Elise? Who do you think? What do you expect to see at least in this upcoming week?
I just think that it's gonna be the same story with the All-Star Week, where I already said this before, but it's just not, we're not flying out here with the Olympic level intensity. I think, you know, people will be kind of pulling punches a little bit and not going with 100% intensity. But I think, you know, the Canada-US game might get bit more intense. I can see that.
Well, that could be intense in the crowd more so than on the ice, but
yeah, well, they better have some loud speakers if they want to hear the anthem. But so that's gonna be an interesting one. I wonder if that could actually get the players a bit more amped, and maybe it will.
Well, I'll put it this way. On that note, and sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you. I'll let you go back afterwards. But in women's hockey, there's this thing called the rivalry series between Canada and the United States. They do it every single year in women's hockey. And it's to determine who's the best. And for the third year in a row, Canada won the rival series against the United States in Prince Edward Island. And after that game, every single one of the players on that team made it a point to say that Canada will always be Canada, and that's why they never want to be the United States. So it may just well translate to these guys on this Four Nations team also.
Yeah, I think the only difference is that these guys have got like someone like McDavid, for example. Like, he's not going to comment on anything like that just because, you know, and you know, he doesn't want kind of bad media like that. But you know what? Maybe someone will. We'll see for that. I did hear that in the locker room currently, it's Connor McDavid and then Seth Jarvis and then Crosby. And apparently, I didn't know this, but apparently Seth Jarvis is like the biggest locker room personality in like the league or something. Like,
really?
Yeah. Apparently he's a total wild card. Like, he's just super rambunctious guy. Like, he's just like, I don't know. I mean, obviously I haven't seen him in action, but yeah, rumor is that he's like, a lot of people are saying Connor McDavid's not ready for the jokes he's throwing at him or something. but yeah, apparently he's just like a totally wild guy. I don't know.
Well, I understand that. I mean, you know, people's personalities change and evolve in the locker room in all sorts of mysterious ways. I mean, Adam, were you a big locker room guy back in the track and field days?
Definitely not. I was definitely more of a cancer more than anything. really disrupted team team bonding. I wasn't really a big team guy at all, actually.
No. Big Patrick Kane modeler.
Big individual kind of guy, you know, really. I'm looking out for myself. No, I'm just kidding. I was not like that at all. Honestly, when I was running track and cross country in high school, I was not on a team. My high school didn't really have teams for cross country and track. It was more of a, not to brag, a one-man show, but
who was the man?
That's just because no one else was. Oh, I was the man, Sam. There was just no one else there. I mean, we still had a decent group of people, but like not enough for a team ever. And those teammates I really cherish and value, and definitely helped me to become a better athlete. I think Sam, you definitely have more experience working with a team, though. I know you. You told me that you were quite doing some measurements in the locker room a few times or something like that.
Okay, well, Well, this is definitely not something we can share. Although I thank you for bringing that up. And no, I was not doing measurements. I just want to make that clear. There's a couple guys, one of which who plays for Nashville, and the other guy's a New Jersey prospect. Perhaps they can answer those questions another day, but I have nothing to do with that.
I was talking about broad jump, Sam.
They kept track of everyone's broad jump in the league.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Okay, all right.
But that's not sure. My. That has nothing to do with me.
I heard that was your expertise, was measuring.
No, I actually had a really small broad jump.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, it was particularly small.
Was that when you were having hip issues? Or
Prior. Yeah, prior. Before and after.
Right.
Oddly
enough,
my broad jumps actually grew longer after the hip issues.
Is that just because of, like, extra working out, or?
Yeah, just kind of, like, extra leg stimulation.
Okay, I see. What kind of workouts in the gym do you hit to improve your broad jump? Because I know that's something that is really important for a hockey player, is to have a good long broad jump.
Yeah, it is. One of the best things to hit for that, sorry, I'm just giggling because Adam's smile is so beautiful. One of the best things you can do is box jumps, squat jumps as well. Weighted lunges are great also. Another great thing you can do is work on track and field, especially hurdles. I wasn't really good at that. I had pretty unflexible hips,
yeah.
Very immobile in that capacity. But the best thing for me at least was jump squats with weights.
Okay.
That helped a lot. Working on the broad jump. But the thing you have to remember as well is a lot of athletes are unique in some sense. For instance, Cristiano Ronaldo, if he does a vertical jump test and he starts flat-footed and jumps straight up, he only gets about 27 inches. If he jumps once and then jumps again, the first jump will always be about 27. The second one's closer to 50. And that's because when you're in the game and you're moving at fast paces, your body is so much more prone to react in an adaptive way to propel yourself with more momentum and more intensity. And it's difficult to get in that mindset when you're just doing basic training. And actually, to further prove and echo this point, a study came out, and it was mostly done on guys like Brian Shaw and Eddie Hall, super strongmen. They're called strongmen, but they're like the super strongmen of the strongmen. And they found that the average person can actually only use about 50% of their force
mm-hmm.
when exerting a movement, but guys like them can use about 70%. And only in rare occasions when you're under the most extreme stress can you use 100%. But mm-hmm. athletes win in a game, use about 80 to 90% of their true force.
Eddie Hall actually went to, for those who don't know, Eddie Hall is like one of the strongmen that Sam mentioned. I actually saw a podcast where he like described how he like would deadlift, and he was deadlifting like 1,200 pounds, keep in mind.
No, so, lightweight, that's a car.
Yeah, but he said that he actually went to a therapist or something to get him to be able to have this like vivid visualization of like one of his children being like stuck under a car.
What?
Yeah. So
he would
get into this like weird trance where he literally was like freaking out because he thought his like kid was stuck under a car or something. So his adrenaline would just like go crazy. And then he would deadlift. So he was like using like this like psychic method to kind of just like get himself into this mindset of like fight or flight, basically.
Did he get like hypnotized, or was it like on his own? Like, did he do it to himself?
It wasn't like a hypnotist. It was like him like practicing like just getting into this like visualizing something in his brain, and then he would kind of like just like almost project this like image in his like mind mm-hmm. of like him being in like serious like peril.
Man, I don't even know how I would start with that, because like, how can you imagine what it feels like to have like your kid stuck under a car? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're gonna be pretty messed up.
Yeah.
Able to like realistically visualize that without ever feeling that feeling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily messed up. It just requires a different understanding of the word discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Being willing to accept that sort of visualization and that sort of emotional distress to lift amount of weight is not something that any sane human would do. But these guys aren't sane. These guys are the top 0.001% of athletes in the world.
Yeah.
So that sort of question of sanity and mental stability is thrown out the window in the pursuit of excellence.
I see.
Yeah. I'll just transfer to another sport here. We don't usually talk about that much about, but the NBA, there's been some big stuff going on in the NBA. Luka, this big trade to we can start with the trade. Obviously, is the biggest news here, but Dallas Mavericks got a bit of a blow to their their prowess in the league.
Yeah, Mark Cuban's not going to be able to Shark Tank for a while after this.
I wonder how much his share of the team there like dropped. Like he probably lost
some say 80%. I'm kidding.
Yeah, that's a bombshell trade for sure.
Yeah, no, I mean Luka is still one of the best players in the NBA, top three in my opinion, and losing Luka Doncic in a trade is insane. Like I it's one thing to be like a free agent and he leaves in free agency, but to trade him away purposefully,
I don't understand. Was it that they couldn't afford him or something? Like
it's
along those lines. No, it's not even that. It was just something else.
It's just like it was very. No one really knows. Like the explanation the GM gave is that he thought he was doing it for the betterment of the team. So
there's something else is going on. There's what betterment for Dallas occurred out of this trade.
If I knew, I think I would be I'd be like either tweeting about it or something and getting a job at ESPN or something, because that is no one knows. Like that's like it's very mind boggling. The trade doesn't really make too much sense for anyone. I mean, obviously it makes sense for the Lakers because that is a fantastic trade for them. What are you showing me, Sam?
That's highly unrelated to what we're talking about. It's just a really funny thing.
Yeah, no, definitely a weird trade. I was saying that the way that the NBA is structured, though, is like it allows for stuff like this to happen almost just because of the cap space for teams is so flexible.
Okay.
That it's just so big. Right. And it just means that they can move crazy pieces like this and then like make a trade like that happen. Whereas in the NHL, or I feel like even in the NFL, like just things like just don't move that easily because you've got to like actually give up players to not just because the other team wants them, but because you actually need to open up cap space to even hold a player with that much of a salary, right? But
do you guys know why the NBA has such a high salary cap?
I think it's more because of how popular it is and how
do they really bring in that much more revenue than the other major sports?
Most of it has to do with the fact that they have a major fan base in China and no other sport really does. And it actually means that their revenues are super high compared to other leagues just because they have like significantly more fans
right.
Globally. But yeah, I mean, it is kind of odd. I don't know the exact reasoning why they have such big cap spaces. I mean, I think it's just the way the league is modeled is just different.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I guess the MLB is kind of like this a little bit, but
there is no salary cap in the MLB.
Yeah. I guess that's the closest comparison I think about it. But the MLB is a bit more, I feel like they just still don't get the same crazy super team sort of thing going on, but I don't know. I think it's just the way the leagues run. I honestly would just say league management is just different and they just see that they don't need to, you know, make it super fair, I guess. Like it's just a different system of fairness for the teams. Yeah. And it's kind of one where teams that are bigger franchises with more money just do better. Like they just will always be better basically. So, yeah.
I know what you mean. I think with the MLB though, because there's like 9 players that you've got to have, like even that's just not even including pitchers. Like, you've got 9 players playing the whole game. And in the NBA, you really only need 2 or 3 stars, and then the rest can be kind of scrubs. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They can be role players, essentially.
Yeah, essentially. But I saw this hilarious video on Instagram, like, yesterday. And it was actually regarding the NHL salary cap.
Oh, yeah?
And it was Denis Savard was the GM of the Chicago Blackhawks when Patrick Kane was, like, drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Patrick Kane was, like, apparently talking to these girls after a game. And Savard like yelled at him and told him to get him to the like bus to go back to the hotel. And then the next morning, Patrick Kane told him that he was actually talking to Taylor Swift after the game. Like one of the girls was Taylor Swift, and they were saying that the NHL salary cap would be booming if Patrick Kane and Taylor Swift ever dated, because it would be like the Travis Kelce effect, but to the NHL. And everyone would know who Patrick Kane is, and the NHL would be huge, and they would have a crazy salary cap. And what do you guys think about that? Do you think that would have been a good thing for the NHL? Like,
well, I think the real question is, was Taylor Swift as popular now as she was then?
I don't know if she was
more popular then than now. I don't know.
Now, way more popular.
You
now.
Think so?
Way more popular now. But
so maybe it would have. But I do think it would have changed a lot of things because the NHL definitely would have had a different degree of glamour associated to it.
Yeah.
And that translates to money really well, especially in the States.
Yeah.
And take in as well. I think hockey players are more accessible in some ways than NFL players. And that, at least to me, and the NFL guys feel like this distant foreign thing, whereas NHLers are really just regular day people, as far as I know them, at least.
I think it's
although I also have a different experience with that. Like, I know a few people who have played, but that's also the part of being Canadian. Just, you know, people who live around you who have played pro.
I think the big difference is actually in the NFL, like, funnily enough, like, the wives of players seem to get, like, weirdly large amounts of attention.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to be the way in the NHL.
No, definitely not. You know, obviously, yeah, like, they're present for events and things. Like, it's, yeah, like, and when there's a goal by, like, Connor McDavid, they flip to his, like, family in the stands or whatever. But that's not really, like, crazy airtime. Like,
yeah.
I feel like in the NFL, like, they definitely get just significantly more attention. Like, Mahomes' family, like, why are they getting, like, this weirdly large amount of screen time? And
yeah, I know what you mean. I honestly think it's just because of how big Mahomes is. Like, he's an entity in the NFL. Like, yeah. He's such a big figure that they want to, like, go into, like, every little detail of his life to, like, advertise and broadcast. And
no, you're right. Yeah. I mean, I think, but I don't know. I guess, like, McDavid's brother, for example, like, no, I don't know. Yeah, like, he doesn't, like, he's been on a couple of shows, and then they talk sometimes, but, like,
yeah.
You're right, though. It's not the same. It's not, like, they don't become,
like,
stars.
They don't bring him up at the start of the game, like, Travis Kelce's brother, like, he was, like, on the ESPN panel or something talking before the game. Like, they never do something like that.
Actually, you know what, Adam? I just thought about a comparable example. Trevor Zegras dates Dixie D'Amelio. Did you even know that?
I didn't know that. I was thinking Mike Fisher and Carrie Underwood. Because, I mean, that's the biggest celebrity that I know. That, yeah. And, like, Mike Fisher, like, was a great hockey player. But, I mean, Carrie Underwood was, like, million times more famous than him. But, like, the NHL never did, like, you know, Carrie Underwood did, like, the Sunday Night Football song? Like, I don't know if you knew that,
but I didn't know that.
Sang, like, the Sunday Night Football. Like, why did the NHL never capitalize on that? I feel like that's kind of a golden opportunity, you know? But I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. They probably should have. I just think marketing's changed a lot as well. I think if Taylor Swift was dating an NHLer today, the NHL would capitalize on that.
Yeah.
Although, look what's happening now, too. I mean, the entire stadium booed Taylor Swift. Do you really think this is really? Do you think this is still helping the NFL after this year?
I think
it is.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're right. Even bad press is good press, but
you underestimate just how much, like, celebrities like Taylor Swift can move markets. Like, Taylor Swift, like, this is crazy, but she has so much influence. Like, she can legitimately not say change the election outcome in the states, but she can certainly shift a, like, actually meaningful amount of votes.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Like, enough that it's, like, a problem for, you know, or not a problem, but, like, enough that a party, like, actually has, like, a serious incentive to, like, communicate with her and try to get her to, like, support them.
Yeah, so, I know what you mean.
I mean, I'm not surprised that she impacts how much that the Chiefs make. I mean, Travis Kelce jerseys soared, like, 700% or, you know,
isn't that crazy?
Huge amount, like, right? So, yeah, stuff like that is huge.
Ridiculous. I don't know, though. I'm excited for next year. I think this football season was kind of bland. It was. I feel like I'm really excited to move on to the next season.
You know what I'll say, though? And this is a really hot take, but I think that every person has to go to a Jets game at least once in their life at the Jets Arena only to hear the, like, J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets at the kickoff.
Yeah.
Because when you watch it on TV, it is the coolest thing in the world. Like, as the guy's about to go kick the ball off, they start chanting. I can't think of anything better in sports other than people booing a certain anthem before the game starts.
I prefer the one where you try to say the Eagles, you start trying to spell Eagles, but you just totally butcher it.
I saw that.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But yeah, that's all we have for you today, guys, and thanks. We'll see you next time.
With the colder months coming up, we're all using more natural gas in our homes. While it's a reliable and safe energy source, it's super important to keep safety in mind. If you smell something weird, like rotten eggs, it might mean that there's a gas leak. Act fast. Leave the area and call your natural gas provider. Also, don't forget about carbon monoxide. It's odorless and invisible, so make sure you have a...
Broadcasting live from the basement of Carruthers Hall. I say, Carruthers, are you all right?